Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Western Focus Podcast. I'm your host, Steven Meister. With me is my constant co-host, NRE Cobalt. The LCS finals have happened. The finals weekend is over. They are done. We have a winner. We know the second team that will be joining FlyQuest in MSI as well to represent North America. The LEC has their playoffs getting started as well, but with this kind of a weird schedule that they got going on, we're kind of just left in the middle of it all with the final two teams who will be getting dropped out before we get into the top four stages of them. I'm sure we'll talk about that a little bit going into this episode, but a lot of games to cover, a lot of very tight series to cover, and some not so tight ones as well that will be a little bit less happy to talk about, at least I will be. But anyways, Cobalt, how are you doing? How did you enjoy this weekend? Definitely a lot of, as I mentioned, exciting games that I've gone through.
Canonically speaking, in my universe, I think that Mega Weeks are not a good idea, just because watching 4 days worth of LEC, especially with how many of those series went the full three games, was a little bit difficult. Like, there's just not enough time in the day to cover it off, so while I usually like to watch them live as best as I can, this time I was kind of trying to play catch up with all that's been going on. But that being said, I think it's been a pleasure as always to watch, and we do have some pretty good ones to cover off here.
The Mega Week idea was cool, but I assumed that they would actually finish the round, which they obviously didn't. There's still going to be two best of threes going into this next week for the LEC that need to get played in this playoff stage for them before the top four gets going. So that's the only critique I don't have. I don't necessarily mind the games. It did suck, you know, in the terms of, like you said, having to kind of catch up to them. It is hard to watch them, you know, live as they're going on when you have stuff going on throughout your day. So that was the only thing that kind of annoyed me. I'm fine with the Mega Week idea. It's a rarity, right? So like it's a cool event that it happens, but you gotta finish the round, in my opinion. Don't leave it hanging going into the next week. Just suck it up and play it that extra day, which would have been today on Wednesday, but they didn't do that. We'll have a little bit more to discuss going into predictions for LEC as well. And that is where we are going to start it off. We're going to save the LCS for the second half of the show, as we started off with that last week. We'll be rotating it off as normal. So Cobalt, was it six LEC series? No, there was four, and then five, six, seven, eight, I think, LEC series that happened. So it would have been two for the 4 days. Cobalt, get us going with the LEC recap.
So despite the volume of games, it seems that the LEC scriptwriters got a little bored, because they had G2 and Fnatic swap places for the first stage of the bracket, but then everything else just played out pretty much identically to Winter, with some very, very minimal variance. So not super plenty of upsets or anything like that, but worth noting that assuming G2 win the split, which at this point kind of how the games have been going isn't the most unreasonable thing in the world to expect, the only teams still in contention for the other MSI slot are BDS, Mad Lions, KOI, and Fnatic, just off the championship point system. So of course, if a team wins, then they will qualify as the first seed. But in the event that G2 wins both Winter and Spring, it's off championship points, and then it's just those three. So kind of the stakes are a little bit in the middle. Teams at this point really need to pull off that whole win right up until the end, but we're going to start off on the kind of opposite end of things with our usual send-offs for the teams that are no longer in contention and have unfortunately concluded their year for the next about 9-10 weeks or so. And first on that list is none other than GiantX, who their week pretty much went exactly as I expected. They weren't completely useless, but still got comfortably 2-0'd by Fnatic in their first one. And then in their second one versus Mad Lions KOI, they looked pretty competitive and took a game, but were ultimately outclassed in the end and unfortunately came out with both of those BO3s lost. So a little bit of credit to them, because that one game was very well played against Mad Lions KOI. They struggled a little bit near the end to close it out and threw a couple shutdowns here and there, but the 12k lead they had at that point was just too much for Mad Lions to crawl back from. And then otherwise, this just continues to be a pretty painfully average team that pretty much seemed to have fluked a 3-0 week last week. So In terms of what comes next for this team, I will pretty much continue to say exactly what I've been saying since the beginning of winter, that Jackie's was an absolute success. That is true. GX's Moneyball pick from a tier three league definitely panned out better than anyone probably expected. And at this point, I'm pretty comfortable in saying he'd be the best player on Giant X overall. But of course, since he's a rookie who hasn't even been to the tier two leagues, he does still have kind of clear weaknesses that need fixing, especially that Azir pick. He just doesn't look all that great on it. Oduwamne, he's solid, but he isn't the Oduwamne of 2022 at all. He still leaves plenty to be desired. And then Ignar, of course, has a storied history, and you see moments of it in his gameplay here for Giant X, but he's still got some of those inting tendencies that need to be shored up. I still think back to that one Yuumi game he played where it just didn't look all that great. And then the other two players are sort of my candidates for where this team should probably make changes. Patrick still continues to be the guy that you would expect plenty of potential out of, but considering the fact he's been in this league for 6 years now, I think it's about time to let him go. He just isn't panning out. He's not really winning you enough games at this point. And then Peach, on the other hand, is a crime. He's the embodiment of my biggest issue with the West at large. Both EU and NA have this sort of issue where, if, in my opinion, you choose to import over someone over picking up regional talent, you by default kind of set a higher bar for that player than for everyone else. All the extra work of integrating this player, fitting in with the language, with the culture, with everything else, you kind of need to justify that with some plug-and-play skill that just boosts your team right off the bat and gives you something that you just can't find regionally. So that kind of is a baseline criteria when you make an import. But this guy is the most nothing burger player in this entire league, and I just don't see any justification for consuming that import slot, not giving a player from the ERLs a chance. You could literally draw from a hat, just pull someone out, see what happens. You'd probably go further than with Peach. And what's even more funny is that his only good champion so far has been pretty much Rell. And after this latest patch that's just dropped this week, she can't jungle anymore. So what else does this guy do that any other player can't bring? So at this point, if GX doesn't drop him for the summer split and find literally anybody else, I'm not convinced this team is interested in winning. He has to go. Patrick really should go. And then Jackie's and Oduwamne probably just deserve a better team. So that's kind of my thoughts on GX at large.
Yeah, I mean, overall, it was like a decent enough kind of little bit of a run here for Giant X with the 3-0 getting into playoffs, but the expected result was the same, the 2-0 against Fnatic. Not really surprising. Their couple of games were like decent enough. They held out for a little bit, but they were both sub 30-minute games that at the end of the day it was Fnatic looking like the cleaner team in for sure. The MDK series, they were able to get a nice game in there to win in game one. Speaking of Peach on Rell, he had a pretty nice Rell game in that one, but no more Rell jungle, which I think is pretty sad. I think she's a lot more interesting in the jungle, seemingly more than as a support. It sucks that they gave their reasons about why the balancing is a little bit too hard, and it makes her a little kind of more OP at support for taking objectives and stuff like that. But I think it would have been nice if they could have kept her in the jungle or just make her a jungler instead of support. I think I would have liked that more. But anyways, that was a good game for Peach on the Rell, as you were talking about. But then the other two games wasn't quite enough. Patrick was kind of really the only hope for them in that third game, but it didn't end up being enough for him. There was a play mid lane where I think Patrick started this game like 5-0, but there was a flank play by Frescawi who he actually didn't end up succeeding at first, but Aloya had a nice flash re-engage ultimate, ironically enough, on the Rell, catching out Peach and Patrick in that play. They both died, and MDK, I believe, took Baron off of that, and then it was a really nice and relatively clean win for them after that. So the one game that Patrick really did kind of need to step up and put the team on his back, he wasn't quite able to do that, but there isn't a lot on this team to help him out too much. Oduwamne and Peach didn't show up in this series very much outside of that first game, like I mentioned, for Peach. And Ignar and Jackie's, again, Jackie's, I do agree with you, definitely has had his moments. He looks like a solid enough player. It's not just like yeah, he had the one, you know, good winter split and has fallen off the face of the earth. He's been relatively, you know, consistent since then. Obviously, nowhere near as hot as that debut game was on the Nico with all those flanks and whatnot, but still a solid player. I don't know what you're going to do to make this team, like, drastically better. There are, you know, some free agent options out there if you do want to look to replace Patrick, because that's always kind of interesting for me, as we've spoken about this to death about Patrick. But he's just, like, a solid AD carry who, like, you can definitely upgrade on if you think there's someone worth taking a chance on, but he's generally not going to be, like, a super detriment to your team either. There's only a couple really, like, notable names out there, like Crowny and Unforgiven, who, like, have, like, some sort of, like, name brand reputation. So if you want to take a shot on them coming in and bringing them into your team if they want to join, then try that. Otherwise, it's going to have to be an ERL guy, like you said, someone who's a lot more unproven. But if you trust your talent staff and your scouting, like you did with Jackie's, might not necessarily be a bad option to look into with that. So there are going to have to be doing, like, some good research on this team, because in all honesty, I wouldn't expect anyone like Crowny or Unforgiven to want to join a bottom team like that. But good enough for Giant X to at least get here, put up a little bit of a fight against Mad Lions, definitely more of a fair fight than they were going up against with Fnatic, but just not enough in that team to make it work. I don't think we need to ramble on too much about them.
And then the other team that has unfortunately been eliminated and finished tied 7th and 8th is none other than SK Gaming. And the first line of my notes here just says, man. Because at this point, my hope can only take me so far for this team, and I'm afraid that at this point, my hope has just completely died. There's just so much that this roster could have been and probably should have been, but what we get in the end on the stage is just constant depression. Like, you look at the Game 2 versus Vitality in their first series, the pivotal moment was kind of in the mid-game around Dragon, where Exekick and Doss escape over a long wall into the Blue Quadrant jungle. And then the broadcast misses this, but it looks like Exekick reacted and sort of goes over back over the wall with the blast cone and pops his ult, starts fighting. But it's actually Doss that, I don't know if it was a misclick or what happened, he clicks the blast cone and unwittingly sends Exekick into the middle of more than half of Vitality at that point. So he reacts well to his credit, and the fight almost looks good, but he lands directly into Douglas's Volibear E, and he just kind of starts with a disadvantage. So especially then Yzma comes in, misses Sejalt onto Karzi, so Karzi turns it around, and at that point it's just kind of game over. Vitality has scaled, and they have enough of an advantage to close it out. Game's over, series is over. And then you turn to the second series they played against Team Heretics, which looked exactly like the one that these two teams had in the lower bracket back in winter, where it was just sloppy, neither team really deserved to win. Game 1 was leaning SK, but neither team played well. Game 2 was leaning Heretics, but neither team played well. And then Game 3 was just dead even, nobody was really making any plays, until Niski just full sends Corki package directly into five people and has no follow-up behind him. What he's thinking, I've got no idea. He just gets blown up, dies, and Exekick is like, hey, hold my beer, I'll do you one better. Full sends it with a Lucian E directly into, what is it, the Cassante, I think. He just gets locked down by Wonder, and at that point, Heretics just has two gift wrap kills. They win the team fight, obviously, at that point, because both of your carries are dead. Get a Baron, game is over. So it's just, performances were not good. They kind of got in their own way, just like always. And it wasn't even a function of them being outclassed. It was a function of them outclassing themselves. So at this point, I'm not even really sure what you would change for this team, if anything at all. It just seems like they're constantly in their own heads. On the broadcast, the players have mentioned that they're kind of emotional and sort of start making irrational decisions and uncharacteristically poor decisions at that. So even though my hopes coming into summer now will be very low for this team, the main thing that I'm hoping for, if nothing else, is that they stop griefing themselves so that I can at least not be sad anytime an SK game comes on. If they lose because they're outplayed, fine. That's fine. Just don't lose on your own, is all I ask.
Yeah, I think that the summation of talking about like the decisions and being emotional can really be summed up in DOS's 2-8 Camille game in that third game. That was pretty abhorrent. Overall, though, yeah, it is disappointing. The first game against Vitality for SK, it was a nice game. Irrelevant was kind of the main guy in that game, and then he enabled Niski and Exekick to kind of catch up a little bit throughout that one, and that was their one win in that series. That the second and third games were a kind of interesting for different ways. The second game just took forever. It was almost like a 40-minute game. It wasn't a clean win for Vitality, but Karzy ended up really going ham on the Xayah that game, and the Zillion support was very fun to see something like that get whipped out. Unlike the Camille, which I was excited to see picked, but the execution was definitely not there with DOS in that third game. And that one was a complete wipe. Vitality was up 5k at 15 minutes. Vidio was 6-0-1 at 15 minutes, and he rushed Hubris for his first item. So that's how you know it's bad. If they're rushing Hubris in pro play, you are absolutely screwed, whoever you're facing with that. It ended up being Jace of all champs, which is definitely very annoying to have go up against you. And of all ways for the game to end, it was Photon backdooring it 29 minutes into it as Vitality's they're pushing top lane. And of course, like, they just can't end the game normally, so we're just gonna send the AD TF in there all alone, and somehow he got to solo kill the Nexus. So two very interesting games for completely different reasons and completely different dynamics in that one. And then the Team Heretic series was again just incredibly disappointing, because this is a team that I liked too. I think we all know you were a little bit more ambitious on them than I was, but I've grown to like the team, obviously, with Irrelevant stepping up and cementing himself as a good player, and definitely one of, if not the best player on the team, with more consistent performances, more so than the rest. And I think the biggest thing when I look at this team is, I would say two things. One, I don't think that the Isma-Niski dynamic is, like, as strong as it looked in Winter. Like, I remember when they were really hot and starting off Winter, Niski and Isma were just running everything together, and we got into talking about, like, man, like, if Niski and Bo, like, imagine how funny that would be, you know, with having that enabling going on. But Isma was doing a really good job with Niski, and I feel like that, for whatever reason, that partnership just isn't quite there in that same capacity in this split. And then the big thing, too, I think, is Exekick. Because as much as I like Exekick, there's too many instances in fights where he's the one, like, frontlining it and getting caught out. Or just, even if he's not frontlining it, but he's in a bad position to get caught by a skill shot that locks him down and sets up a dive onto him. And then SK will lose a fight off of that. So I don't know what they want to do, because I do like a lot of the individual players on the team. That third game, as you mentioned, with that Niski play was very uncharacteristic of him, going back to that decision-making and an emotional kind of standpoint. The only thing that I thought of is that he thought he would make it over the Raptor wall. That's the only thing that I could think of, because he did stop, like, literally right in front of it. So I don't know, maybe he thought, okay, I'm close enough, it should, like, send me over, like, halfway over or whatever, and get me through there. And then that was another instance right after that of Exekick, as you said, you know, talking about dashing into melee range of Wonder on Cassante. I think there was another game too, I forget which series it was, but he had a couple of really bad deaths too, again, frontlining and just not being in the proper position for playing in AD carry and in pro play, especially, you know, especially if you're not on Lucian either, which he was on Lucian in that third game, but we saw what happened there. So gonna be interesting to see what's gonna go on with SK. The talent is there to some extent, and if it is team dynamic stuff that is the big issue for them, you would hope that stuff that can, you know, get ironed out. You know, some of those players are, you know, a bit younger. Isma's a rookie. Exekick and DOS aren't necessarily rookies, but they won't have a ton of LEC experience. You know, working on things like emotions and proper decision-making and keeping everything in check and effective communication is stuff that luckily should be able to be improved on, as long as you and your teammates are willing to put in the effort to get on that same page. And also, you know, you yourself need to work on your emotions too, if that's something that's a problem for any one of those players. The problem should be fixable. And again, it's like, the only guy I'm not a super big fan of is DOS. But what support really is out there now, you kind of missed your chance to get Trimby. I don't know if you would have went there anyways, but that would have been obviously a great addition wherever he would have ended up. He ended up going to Heretics, who they lost to and got eliminated by. Kaiser's out there. Is that... I mean, it probably would be an upgrade, but it's a different kind of dynamic there. I would be interested in seeing that happen, if that's something that would be on the table if Kaiser wants to get back playing. But yeah, I don't know. It seems like one of those teams that might just be kind of doomed to be stuck in the middle for a while. And then you also showed me Niski's picture on Twitter where he was chilling with Bo for April Fool's. So that was a fun picture as well. Maybe it's going to be SK Bo, or maybe it's going to be Casey Niski. Hopefully it's not Casey Niski, because I like Niski.
I just find it funny that he captions that picture 2025 as if he is already planning on linking up with Bo in some capacity. So
true. I forgot about that.
It's kind of thematic with our conversations, but whether or not that actually happens at this point, doubtful. It's a little too early to make claims like that, but who really knows, I guess. And then we will move on to things that are significantly less depressing in terms of what is coming up, what kind of series we can expect, and sort of the predictions we have for those series. So, quick overview of the schedule. As you mentioned, Steve, the BO3 round is not quite over. We have one more day of that on Saturday. These will be the last two series that determine our top four. Sunday will be the upper bracket final between G2 and BDS. Both of these teams, once again, are locked top three. And then Monday is the first lower bracket BO5 between whoever the two teams are that win on Saturday. So I guess this is sort of the main motivator for why we had four game days, is that I guess the LEC doesn't like the idea of potentially making a team play three BO5s in a row if they make the run all the way through. But yeah, this is where we're at. So we'll jump right into the first series between Fnatic and Team Heretics. And the way I see it, there's two different kind of approaches you can have for how this series will play out. Approach one, both teams play in peak form, they show up on the day, and it's just a battle of who's better. If that's the case, I genuinely do believe that Heretics are the better team and have more potential. I think that Fnatic have proven to be a team that, while they have good games and good performances, Razork is literally the key where he needs to make proactive plays in the early game, get his team ahead, get them snowballing, and then at that point they're very good about keeping the pace going and leading it towards a win. So they're good at closing, but they need to get there in the first place, and the other members just aren't that great at doing that. But you might remember that Heretics, in the best of one earlier this season, beat Fnatic, and that's despite Fnatic having a very good early game, and then Heretics just kind of played superior team fighting, and that's how that led them to the victory. So they kind of beat Fnatic at their own game, and I think that on paper they should be better. But approach two, which is the more likely one, is you go based off current trajectories, which, as I mentioned earlier, neither Heretics nor SK really deserve to win that last series. Both kind of played like garbage, to be honest with you. So if you look at that, like it really just should be a clean 2-0 sweep for Fnatic. I don't think it will be all that close unless Heretics bring something out that we're not expecting, we haven't seen yet. It just seems like they're mega debuffed as soon as they hit playoffs, and I think that it's just going to continue. Fnatic will just prove to be the far better team and take it 2-0.
Okay, I mean, I think that's an interesting prediction. I do think that the one thing that I would point out in your kind of trajectory argument is that, yes, obviously the Heretics SK series was pretty sloppy, but Fnatic haven't had like a super awe-inspiring performance against G2. They got 2-0'd pretty convincingly, and that second game was just wild with that ending. But other than that, obviously, you know, you would probably bank on Fnatic just being the better team overall, like you mentioned, in terms of being able to have, you know, for the most part, better players, and especially if Razork is on his form, which for the most part he generally is. He's able to really get the team going and, you know, can kind of keep them firing on all cylinders. I do think that is an interesting kind of situation that you laid out with your first scenario, I guess, for lack of a better word. I think that makes sense. I don't quite think I feel comfortable predicting Heretics to win, even though I think that there's a chance, and I think it would be kind of cool. I also don't feel comfortable going Fnatic 2-0, though. I think it's going to be a 2-1 for Fnatic. I do think that Heretics does have enough there to take a game, and I don't think that's a huge reach. I think that, obviously, with Flakid and Trimby down there, that is a huge point of strength for them. And unless we do see a lot of attention down bot lane from Razorc, I don't necessarily think that Noah and Jhin are super capable of, like really winning, like, the lane. I feel like it would rather just be even, or maybe we'll see Yankos going down there a lot and trying to get them rolling, knowing that should be the main lane that you would want to play through that series. Zyru versus Humanoid, you probably have to give him some attention, make sure he doesn't fall too far behind, but I wouldn't be putting my eggs in Zyru's basket at all in terms of being, like, the main guy on that team, and obviously you're not going to be expecting Wonder to be doing any hard carrying. So if Heretics can get you that bot lane going, that would be the kind of tipping point. I talked about this with Fnatic in that last episode we did. It does come down to Razorc a lot. I don't necessarily trust the laners too much to find super strong advantages on their own. It would have to be Razorc kind of facilitating things for them. And the only way that I would say that backfiring is if Fnatic are kind of in that mindset too, like, okay, like, listen, like, we know they're not going to be going through Wonder. Zvairu, I highly doubt they're going to put that pressure on a rookie in this. So we know they're going to be looking to get bot lane going, so we're just going to have Razorc just stay down there too and just counter Yankos as much as possible and just try to put a ton of resources down there and counteract them. That'd be the only way I would see Fnatic 2-0-ing, is if they identify it as that would be the main strategy that Heretics would want to go down, and they do what they can to counteract that. Otherwise, I see Heretics being able to at least take a game, focusing on Flakid, focusing on Trimby, and getting going down there. But I'll give it Fnatic 2-1 overall, because I do agree in the fact that, generally speaking, they should be the better team, even though I really do like what I've seen from Heretics this split.
And then the other BO3 that we're going to see just before the BO5 stage fully kicks into gear is going to be Vitality versus Mad Lions Koi. And I think that stylistically, at least, this is just about the worst possible outcome that Mad Lions Koi could have hoped for, where their successes in the winter split very much hinged off of sort of chaotic skirmishes, hands-diffing people, outplaying them, and sort of through that mechanical skill more so than macro or game knowledge, they snowball that into a victory, and then obviously we saw them reach finals. In spring, however, teams across the board, not just Vitality, have sort of improved in dealing with this. I think that they're better at kind of keeping Mad Lions Koi in check, and that's a lot of the reason why their level has dropped this hard. I don't think it's so much that they're necessarily playing different or worse. It's more so that the other teams are sort of better at adjusting and handling what it is they're trying to do. But then when you look at the other side of the rift here, and you see people like Karzy and Hillisang, who are absolute maniacs, they just thrive and breathe in chaos, you're not very happy as Mad Lions Koi, I don't think. So, as much as it pains me to admit, Vitality have been having a very good split so far, and on the other side, we just saw Mad Lions Koi struggle to dispatch GX, who are, in my mind, undoubtedly the weakest team in playoffs. So, while we saw Mad Lions Koi 2-0 Vitality at this very same stage in the winter split, this time I'm going to give it 2-0 to the other way for Vitality, because Mad Lions Koi have yet to overcome this sort of slump they've been in all split, and I don't really anticipate that sort of the way these two teams want to play, that they're going to kind of recover at this point either.
This one's definitely a tale of the kind of reverse momentum that these teams have had with the blazing start that Mad Lions was in winter split, and now, as you mentioned, definitely cooling off, teams being able to realize, okay, we can't take these guys lightly. We've seen what happens when we take them lightly. We know what their strategy is, generally speaking. We're going to be able to find ways to counteract them, and just in some instances too, just teams just got to play better overall in general, and that's definitely happened going against that Mad Lions team. Whereas with Vitality, definitely has been some major improvements. Karzy has had a really solid split. Photon and Daglas have looked improved, especially Photon. Photon has really stepped it up, and I'm happy to see him doing that as being that kind of one survivor from that Vitality super team. The trust that organization had in him is certainly paying off as of now. Hopefully that'll be something that will continue, and he can continue to be a really strong point up there in the top lane. And I agree with you. I'm going to give it a 2-0 for Vitality. Definitely two different tales of momentum, two different trajectories for both of these teams. I don't really see much in it for Mad Lions. The one dynamic that is always interesting, as you heavily emphasized, chaos. When there's chaos, anything can happen. Mad Lions is definitely a team that can thrive on it. Hilly is a person and a player who will go either one of those two ways. Karzy's, for the overall of his career, has been a player that can definitely go either way of good or bad in the chaos, but I'm going to put the trust in him. He's been playing really well, and the team overall has been looking much improved, as we've mentioned. So 2-0 definitely makes the most sense, but at the end of the day, chaos is chaos, so I wouldn't count out Mad Lions finding some sort of sneaky way to pull this out.
Good calls for sure. And that'll lead us, we're going to kind of jump a little bit just to kind of keep the momentum here going, where, assuming our predictions pan out the way we expect, that Monday series will be presumably Fnatic versus Vitality. So since, again, we're kind of going off speculation, I'm going to keep my analysis on the lighter side, but I'm going to have to kind of channel my Fnatic hater by saying that I think Daglis has leveled up a lot. And, like, good call out from you to say that Photon has been leveling things up. But I think Daglis as well has sort of stepped up and turned into similar kind of position and role that Razorak plays in Fnatic. Daglis has been doing the same kind of thing, where his early game plays have ramped up and have been productive for this team. I think he does succeed in many cases to get his laners certain leads, you know, not huge by any means, but a kill or just burn a couple summoners, help them get a wave pushed, things like that. He is very much helpful in that regard. So I don't think that he's necessarily better than Razorak. He's still been probably among the top junglers in the league. But just the fact that they have similar goals in that early game, which is so critical for Razorak and Fnatic at large, he will at least be challenged and disrupted in that sense, because Daglis is sort of aiming for the same things. So with that being said, I think that Vitality just has more win conditions. Fnatic, of course, is sort of that one-track mind, more or less. If I simplify all that put together, I think that this is going to be a very competitive series. I'm hoping for a competitive series, but Vitality should edge it out, and it'll be a very close 3-2 scoreline in favor of Vitality.
So I think my gut is probably telling me that Fnatic should win. But it really should be a very interesting series. We know that G2 BDS is the upper bracket final. I'm not going to be expecting anything crazy going on in that one, but this should be the one to look out for. I'm really having a hard time, because this is a Vitality team that has looked a lot improved, but I don't know if I can still put it behind me that like even though he has been improved, I don't know if I feel comfortable with, like, Daglis being able to kind of still have that same level of impact against Fnatic as a whole, which is interesting, because it's not like Fnatic's, like, a crazy team, you know, that does, like, a lot of invading or stuff and, like, you know, tricks and throwing, you know, the enemy jungler off guard or whatever. So it is kind of a tough decision to make. I didn't put too much thought into this, obviously, because, as you said, this is more of just, like, looking ahead. My gut's telling me, like, probably 3-1 Fnatic, but it is gonna be fun regardless, because I really do, again, kind of the same thing with the Heretics and Vitality series. I really like the bot lane matchup. I think Karzy and Hilly versus Noah and Jhun is interesting, because I feel like the dynamics there are very, very, like, opposite. I feel like Noah is generally seen more as, like, conservative and not having that kind of eye for the crazy angle or whatever, and he has a lot of structure around him, whereas with Karzy, he definitely has structure around him, but he's a lot more chaotic, and the team in general is a lot more chaotic than Fnatic overall. And then I think honestly the biggest thing for me might even be top lane, because I don't think Oscar is bad. He hasn't looked anywhere near as bad as he did have in that run in playoffs and last split. But if Photon is going to be able to keep on stepping things up and looking as good as he has been in some of his games, that might be kind of like the X factor matchup to look at there, where if there is some kind of extra special emphasis, maybe Daglis wants to kind of take it up top then. Because we've seen Oscar have some real stinkers and he's out of the game, and it's really hard to when you're missing generally speaking, probably the tank in pro play, whether it's a Kassante or whatever. But having that one person that just gets super far behind, it's very hard to deal with in pro play. And I think if you can do that top lane, then I think it will be easier for Vitality to kind of use that and snowball it. Like, I loved watching Photon play the ADTF. If that's a pick that they can put on him and kind of be able to snowball impact around the rest of the map, that would be kind of fun. So I might go Vitality 3-1. I don't think it's going to be a 3-2. I think at the very least Vitality is too chaotic to make it go to 5, but I also think that like one of these teams is probably going to crumble at some point and have just like a blow up game, whether it's Vitality or Fnatic. Something's going to happen where it's not going to go to 5 games. I'm going to say Vitality 3-1. I'm going to say watch out for the top lane. If Photon can get rolling and really isolate that matchup, or if again that kind of chaos reigns in the bot lane, if Karzy can really enable a game and take over a game, I think that those would be the two things to look at. I think Vito is a good player, obviously, but I think that's kind of the most even matchup is mid lane, with like on an individual skill level between Vito and Humanoid. I'd say try to exploit those side lanes where I think, especially on their day, but I would say probably even in general, I would take Photon over Oscar. I would have Karzy and Hilly over Noah. I think Jhin's pretty good, but I would probably take the high highs of Karzy and Hilly over the kind of more just like middle of the road, stable, consistent play, a very strong team fighter with Noah, but again, doesn't look for super crazy angles, doesn't have that kind of like killer instinct in him, whereas Karzy definitely has that, and I really like that about him. So I'll say 3-1 Vitality.
A lot of bouncing back and forth, and I think that's fair
It was
because
tough. It's t it
it's.
is it is gonna be a banger series, but
Oh,
I
yeah.
don't think it goes to 5.
Yeah, fair enough. And then we're going to jump into the final series, or time-wise, not final, but we're going to jump back. Is that upper bracket final, which is once again between G2 versus BDS?
We don't need to talk about this.
Really? Are you sure?
We don't need to talk about this.
Because I think, and I'm gonna kind of narrow things down a little bit, just both in the interest of time and because obviously you're not thinking too much about it. I think that BDS has shown things that are very interesting. Where my closing thoughts on them last week, I had them dropping out at 7/8, but I think that while they looked in the regular season like they've been sort of venturing outside of their comfort zone, picking things they might not normally pick or playing in ways they might not normally play, they've kind of made it work here in playoffs so far, where they really took it personally that everyone called them a team fighting team and nothing else, and showed that they kind of know a lot better how to play around sides and doing more things than just setting up team fights. So that series first one against Heretics, I think, was a very good demonstration of this, where anytime you saw Heretics do something, BDS were matching that cross map or even doing more across the map. Every single time, literally without exception, any play that Heretics made, BDS got more. They never gave anything for free, always secured some kind of advantage out of it, and it was just a very strong deconstruction of Heretics, rarely ever gave them a window to do anything. And then against Vitality, they showed that they still got it with the team fighting side, where in game two they were behind and Vitality started up a Baron, but BDS collapsed bot lane, killed off Photon, and then very quickly rotated up and absolutely wiped out Vitality around that pit with nothing in exchange. And then game three, Vitality start a TP play, but then BDS turn it around and just took fight after fight after that. So, you know, with the cherry on top of the Ice Penta in game two and the Nuke Penta in game three, they've very much returned to form, I think. So, while in the end, all of that to say it's still going to be boring, I'm going to say that G2 take it. They've continued to look dominant and leagues above the rest of the LEC continues to be the case. But I think that this time, as opposed to the 3-0 we saw, it's going to be a 3-1 in favor of G2. And BDS is going to kind of make them sweat for it a little bit, at least. That's kind of what I'm hoping, is that it's exciting.
Wow, what a bold prediction there. 3-1. Very, very, very enticing.
I can't do more than that. Like, G2 just looks so enticing. Much better.
The new Quay game with the Penta was very fun, though. He killed it in that game. But I don't have too much to say about it. Like, I like BDS. Against most of the teams in the league, I'll take them in a competitive series, but not against G2. They still haven't proven it yet. And I think even though they have shown some different styles, you still see some of those issues of, I would say, still more so like Ice getting caught out too much, Nuke sometimes still not being in the right position. Yeah, I mean, I can't. I mean, I kind of meme the 3-1 with you, because, like, yeah, it's like, yeah, maybe they can take a game. Because I always say that. It's like, yeah, maybe this team can take a game against this team. And, you know, they're in theory, they're good enough that it happens. But I'm just going to say G2 3-0 and move on with my night.
I really can't blame you, because that's sort of the things that we've been seeing. G2 very much showed that they're serious about spring, that sort of closing sequence to the regular season wasn't really what their trajectory looks like I was kind of fearing. 3-0 is not off the cards by any means. But with all that being said, I think we've gone on long enough. There's a lot of excitement to be had on the other side of the pond here with the closing weekend of the LCS, and I'm going to hand it off to you, Steve, to take it away and get us started on that.
Some will call it excitement. I call it immense pain and depression, because the first series of the LCS finals weekend was my favorite team, Cloud9, versus Team Liquid. And unless you lived under a rock, it was a 3-0 for Team Liquid, a resounding 3-0 for Team Liquid on top of that. And to just, like, spare, like, a full-on rant, I'm going to try to keep my points broad intentionally, because I really could have just made, like, a full episode talking about the LCS and just having, like, 45 minutes of it being against on this series. So, again, for the sake of brevity, the same issues for Cloud9 that usually are the downfalls of this team in the past are the drafting, and it's still there. I don't know what you can really do about it unless, like, you drastically, like, overhaul, like, the team, because, again, and not being in touch with any of these teams, right, just as an outside fan who does a lot of the drafting, is it more coaching staff oriented, or is it more of the players on stage taking over and saying, I want to pick this champion because I like this champion, or, you know, it looks good here, you know, whatever that dynamic is, that's been always their crux. And granted, it's a crux for a lot of teams. No one really drafts, like, super duper well. But when Cloud9 are fumbling, like, I remember during the end of Reaper's tenure on Cloud9, like, he was getting railed because the drafts and them going internationally was just terrible. They weren't able to do anything for the most part. And then we go into this split. Again, obviously, it's Mythi now instead of Reaper. But it's the same issues where I talked about it in the FlyQuest series. Some of those drafts were just completely unplayable. At least two of them were completely unplayable. And the very first game here, C9 versus Team Liquid, C9 picks Renekton, Maokai, Orianna, Kalista, Renata versus Cassante, Jax, Ziggs, Varus, and Zyra. So I want you to tell me, as the viewer, what can C9 realistically do there? Because you have, like, your best player in theory, and it is tight now between Berserker and JoJo, but I would still say on an average performance, Berserker should be the best player on Cloud9. He's playing Kalista. How on earth is he supposed to do anything with a Zyra ultimate on the ground, Zyra E being thrown out at him? He has to dodge Varus R and E, Ziggs minefield, Jax can just completely ignore all of his auto attacks, and then Cassante is kind of like the least annoying champion in that list of all things, somehow, surprisingly, but he's still Cassante as long as he's not completely super far behind. So your main guy on your team really has no like feasible way of realistically being able to function and maneuver around those team fights safely. And it's like the rest of the team, like, sure, like Orianna's like a good team fighting champion. The Shockwave can always have some big potential there. But the only way that that's going to happen is if C9 gets to late game. And that would imply that they can actually like be a cohesive unit and work as a team and not just fumble every single thing that they try to do together as a team. And that's the long and the short of it for this series. C9, very similar to that FlyQuest series, just got outdrafted, outplayed. They looked completely lost as a team. This first game, here's my brief summary of notes. First game, they lost from the draft unless they got a huge lead early. What's Berserker going to be able to do in team fights? Everyone just gets poked down, sieged down. They can't fight really well with all the AoE, CC, and damage. The second game, I just wrote C9 is trash. And then the third game, I wrote embarrassing. But I did like the third game draft a little bit more, because at the very least, they kind of just leaned into what they're doing. They picked Olaf, Xin Zhao, Karma, Lucian, Nami. It's like, okay, we are just gonna run at you as fast as humanly possible. We don't care about crowd control. We have Olaf to deal with that. We don't care about your range. You have Ziggs and Varus. We're just gonna just run and dash straight onto you. And if we can't kill you, then you know what? That's okay, because we're not going to be able to do anything else anyways. So I at least liked that they just kind of played into it, just went full run it down at the opponent. It obviously didn't work anyways. They got destroyed. But the drafting is like the main point of this team, where it's like, I don't know what they're going to be able to do to fix it. Because again, whether it comes down to players, and you have to overhaul the players, or the coaching staff, and either bring on more people, or, you know, let go of Mithy and bring in someone else. That's the main part of this team that's always been criticized about C9 when they're doing bad. And again, it's a big issue for a lot of teams, but it sucks when you're Cloud9 because you constantly have the talent there, and it sucks when, like, you can blatantly see it that they're just hindering themselves before they can even load into the game. Because I've been a guy who, I wasn't really like super into like, you know, old, like debating drafts and all that stuff before recently, like the last couple of years or so. I just went they're playing like, you know, comfort champions, or like, oh, like I know, like, you know, these two carries scale really well, even if the opposing team scale really well, C9 should just be the better team. But in all seriousness, watching those, that FlyQuest series and this Team Liquid series, it was just impossible for some of those players. Again, Berserker, especially when he's playing Kalista into all that CC that he's going against and into like numerous games, it's impossible for him to do anything. He had like an 8-kill Kalista game in that FlyQuest series. They still got stomped in that game because they couldn't function properly in those proper 5v5 team fights. And now going from that kind of broader macro scale down to now looking at the individual players, the same issues that are there last season in terms of like the role issues are still there here. You're still looking at top lane. You're still looking at support. I'm completely fine with Blaber. He had a rough split. The dude's been, you know, MVP for numerous splits. He's been killing it every single year. He's been in the league, basically. I'm not worried about Blaber. JoJo definitely had some bad moments, but for the most part, I would say he was probably C9's most consistent player. And Berserker, again, definitely his worst split since coming into the league. But there's a lot of stuff going on. And I do think that the dynamic in the bot lane has definitely shifted from Zven to Vulcan, which is something I mentioned in the preview episode talking about Cloud9. If something was to go wrong, it could be a bot lane related issue, and we definitely did see that in part. Berserker not having a good individual split, and I think Vulcan is a huge difference there now from Zven being gone. So realistically speaking, if we're looking at Cloud9, they're not going to MSI, which is completely unacceptable for them just because of the pedigree of the organization, right? They're usually, you know, C9's or NA's last hope at Worlds. They're a team you can count on to go there. And before you could count on them to make it to quarters, now you can maybe expect them to put up a decent performance in groups. But that's just kind of the standard now, unfortunately. So what can C9 do realistically to try and make this team better? Because again, I'm fine with keeping jungle mid and AD carry. You're looking at top and you're looking at support. Fudge, last year I was adamant that, guys, he's not that bad. Just cool it for a little bit. He'll be fine this year. And, you know, again, as always, players have their good games, but there were definitely more noticeably bad performances from Fudge, where now my idea has shifted, like, okay, yeah, like I'm fine moving on from him, especially in that Renekton game versus TL in this series in game 2. He did have a hard lane matchup versus the Rumble, but he was like 1-5 in that game. It was completely useless. And if you're looking to do something there, the only really easy option is like Licorice, which I think would be a fun option because obviously he was on C9 before. And he obviously had a great split and season with Golden Guardians last year before that team ended up folding and going under. That's probably the easiest option there in terms of what they could do now. We all know the rumors before of them talking with Wonder going into the season, but that's irrelevant now. And then as for support, I mean, you could just bring back Zven. I know he said he doesn't want to play support, really, but I would try to convince him to come back because I think they need him. I think, like, in all seriousness, as much as, you know, maybe the individual skill level of support wasn't quite there, mainly so more so on the engaged champions, because in that meta it was all enchanters. I've talked about this with Sven so much too. The personality that he has is just perfect for a team like C9. And listening to like people like LS and interviews after C9 getting eliminated and stuff like that, I think people do kind of share that commonality of, and even the players were talking about, I think it was a player interview that I heard this in, but like Sven was someone for Cloud9 who could like keep them in check and say no when they wanted to maybe do like a risky play and reel them back in and keep them focused. And that's a huge thing that I do think that this team definitely misses. So I'd love to see him come back, bring him back at support, try to do everything you can. If he wants to come in at ADC, I don't think I would like that. But if there was a situation that, you know, if Berserker like wanted out, you know, like not necessarily that you're looking to sell him, but if a team comes in with a crazy buyout and Berserker, you know, wants to go there, whether that's, you know, back in Korea or Europe or wherever, you know, I'm just throwing stuff out there, obviously not knowing if there's anything going on, but if Berserker wants to go, bring him back as AD carry, sure, why not? Give him a tryout. You know, if you want to bring in another AD carry because you don't want to bring back Sven, again, as I mentioned before, there's like maybe Crowny, there's maybe Unforgiven, but those aren't like great options necessarily. The only other free agent support that's like really notable is Treats. And I do think Treats would be an interesting pickup because I know you're a big fan of Treats, Cobalt. And I think that just having a player who is seemingly really open to like trying stuff and playing everything, because Vulcan is a player who is extremely limited to the melee engage tank supports, that he doesn't really play enchanters, and if he is forced to play them, he doesn't usually perform that well. His last Nami game in the TL series was okay, but he is very much limited onto the melee engage tank supports more. Bringing in someone like Treats could maybe bring in more diversity, could be an interesting partnership with two younger players down there with Berserker and him. So, you know, again, just spitballing stuff, possibilities of what could happen. Obviously, there's an import slot still open on that team. Berserker is the only one that's on an import right now. So I don't think that there would be a major change like that in between splits. That's more something you'd probably look towards at the end of the season after Summer Split and Worlds. But there is still an import slot open for one of those guys to come in, whether it's an EU guy or someone from Korea. Berserker is going to get picky and say he wants, you know, like a Korean support now or something like that. So there's stuff that C9 can do again. And then the last note is, again, coaching staff. Maybe Mythy goes if that's deemed a big enough issue. We've talked about coaches being the fall guy before. Maybe Mythy is the one who gets changed, and then they see if they can run it back with the same team and just like a different coach leading them. So that's my thoughts on C9. I still did get kind of rambly there at the end, so sorry about that. I did want to try to keep it broad, but talking about the player, sometimes you just have to talk about them a little bit more because it's not as general as just talking about like drafting and the team play being bad and stuff like that. So go ahead, Cobalt, for your thoughts on that series.
Very good points, and I think always going to default to you for the C9 expertise for sure. But I'm gonna, as the narrative guy, I'm gonna kind of take that angle, and I'm gonna steal a point that I heard from Hotline League last week, where a caller proposed that every team for success requires a newer player. And they said that it's either a rookie or a sophomore in order to succeed. And that is sort of the main reason why super teams more or less always tend to fail. And I hate to assign that label. I know you hated to call them a super team, Steve, but C9 this split on paper were expected to be a super team. And it really comes down to the fact that someone on the team has to kind of give. You have five people, all of them are going to have their own thoughts, their own kind of ideas, strategies about what's good, how you play, what kind of drafts you put together. Everyone has opinions, of course. But it's not very likely that when you have all five people talking, that they're all going to align by default. So people have to be willing to give, either align with someone that's a big voice, or maybe find compromises in certain areas, but something has to give. And who is more inclined to do that than a rookie who's just trying to show that they belong in the league? They're finding their place, they're willing to adjust, they want to learn more than anything. So they're going to give, they're going to kind of follow with what the team thinks. Now, C9, being the kind of team that the kind of organization even that is very hungry for winning and more or less always sits near the top of the LCS, I think that they're likely to address something. If it's the roster, I think that Fudge is definitely the clear choice. He, in many cases, not only looked weak, but even a liability in a lot of cases. So he's probably a pretty obvious replacement. But you covered that pretty well, Steve, so I won't really dwell. The other option that I'm going to go a little deeper on is that I think the coaching staff needs some sort of adjustment. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that Mythy's bad, everyone grab your pitchforks, run him out of town. That's not what I'm saying by any means. I just think that from what I've heard, we have Mythy on site working with the team and Veigar V2 working remotely, and that's all they've got. So I don't know if you're going to run Mythy out and find someone else. That's an option, of course. But I'm going to say that I just like the idea of bringing on more people. Obviously, with G2, and I'm going to kind of jump to EU here for a second, G2 brought back Duffman, who was with them with the 2019 run. And they let him go, but they brought him back because he was sort of helping them out. His main purpose was to help him out with the mid game, which they identified as their main weakness. So I think that C9 would very much benefit from a similar strategy. Just bring on some kind of new voice, some sort of authority, and allow them to do something new.
C9 had Duffman though for part of last. I think it was last year. They had Duffman. He left and then he went back to G2 now. And then C9 do also have Hai. He's been on the stage a little bit more, like with Mythy and stuff during the drafting. I don't know exactly what his role with the team is. I think initially he was brought on as team like manager, and then it seemingly maybe looks like he's evolved a little bit more into coaching maybe, but there's nothing official about that. But yeah, it's mostly Mythy and then Veigar V2 Remote, who does have some like interesting stuff with dealing with drafts and whatever, but how much of that do they actually implement because he's not there and he's not like super connected with the team being in person. And then Hai is the only other guy that I know of for sure that they mentioned is like a real like person that's constantly around the team. And Hai has a legacy, so even if he's not like specifically a coach, I'm sure he's getting his input in there because he's a legacy and star in that organization's history.
For sure. So, they have people on site, they have people working with the team, but I just think that they'd benefit from something new, something to shake them up, give them an alternate perspective, shake things up with their strategy, because clearly what they've been doing isn't quite enough for the title. And at the end of the day, C9 should be aiming for the title. So, where they go, I'm not really sure. Not my place really to say. I don't work in that field, and I'm sure that they know what they're doing. Trust in the process, as C9 likes to say. But I'm
The
personally
systems.
the systems. There you go. That's what they've tweeted before. And in the past, the systems have worked, so maybe they'll work again. But in any case, I'm just not really sure I'm going to be satisfied if all we get is the salty run back. Keep it light. I think that they have a lot of things going for them. It's just that they need to adjust something to kind of give them a light the fire to make them break something and push forward with something new. And then hopefully they bring it back, because not having C9 at internationals is just sad.
They did tweet out expect the unexpected today, which doesn't necessarily mean anything, because that the organization obviously on social media too loves to meme. So there's nothing really to read into that. But I think from both of our perspectives, when they tweet out expect the unexpected, I would expect changes. You would expect changes. That would lead me to think that they wouldn't change anything. But again, that's influenced from your perspective on things. So can't really read into it, but it's just something to add in here as the final note for C9, which again, not making it to the finals of Spring Split, not making it to MSI, is definitely a huge disappointment for the team and the organization as a whole. But that does lead into the finals, the actual important series here, FlyQuest versus Team Liquid, which ended up being a 3-1, not necessarily a surprising scoreline, but Team Liquid actually carried the momentum all the way through playoffs and took down FlyQuest in all things considered, a convincing series win. Fly won the second game, but even that had some sketchy moments. There was a Team Liquid Baron steal at 21 minutes in that kind of got them back into that game. They were down a little bit at that point, but leave it to Inspired, who on the Lee Sin, as he did against C9 and against Team Liquid now in this game, found a couple of nice Lee Sin ward hop kicks onto Yan to help FlyQuest get back in the game, win a couple of team fights. And then once that one specific fight happened with that ward hop kick, I believe it was in top lane river, but I could be wrong misremembering that, but they won that fight. Nevertheless, the last couple of team fights were a bit more in their control, and they close out that game for the one win of the series. Game one was the biggest stomp of them all. TL ended in like 25 minutes or 26 minutes. It was just a complete obliteration in that game. And then game four was a very interesting close, with FlyQuest catching out Umti at 20 minutes. So Baron's up, they were close enough proximity to Baron. They think, okay, yeah, let's see if we can do this, get some momentum going, obviously with a 20-minute Baron, get this to a quick game five, hopefully with a huge gold lead and ending it out quickly. But it did not end up going that way, because Yan just absolutely nearly 100-0'd Inspired in the pit on the Varus. He ended up R-ing him, ulting him over the Baron wall. Inspired is tanking the Baron. He gets Varus Q'd and E'd, and he goes basically from 100-0. Not quite, but in the ensuing chase, they're able to chase him down. They got a couple other kills off the back of that, and then Team Liquid were able to take the Baron. And that fight really stood out to me, not only because of just obviously the attempted Baron that went wrong, and a nice play by Yan to land that ultimate and chunk out the jungler, but APA's Taliyah had a couple of Taliyah combos there, one on Busio, and then the second one, on Masu, where both of them like could have flashed the W, but they didn't. The Busio one, I give him a little bit of lenience, because it did look like he was out of it, but obviously he wasn't. He was just on the edge, got flicked back in for that first death, and then Yan landed the ultimate over the wall, and then in the ensuing chase down that happened, an easily flashable Taliyah W that Masu chose not to end up flashing and just tank it and die. I don't know if I fully agree with that. Now, maybe you can argue that TL would chase them down, but I think like Masu was basically at full health at that point, and the only two casualties were Busio and Inspired. I don't remember the exact specifics of the situation, but it definitely was, or definitely could have been at the very least, a spot where if Masu flashes it, TL could still try the Baron, but there's at least an opportunity for FlyQuest to contest it if they want and maybe force them off, and at least you don't lose completely everything off of a play like that. I don't know, again, I don't know why Masu didn't flash it, because it was obvious he was going to get hit by it. It wasn't like Busio where maybe like, oh, you could maybe argue that the hitbox was a little big or whatever. He was clearly inside of it. So I don't know if he thought that the flash wouldn't get him out, or if he just didn't want to react to it. He chose not to flash, but that ends up being a huge pivotal point in that game, because TL are able to take full control off of that and end up winning that series in that fourth game there, 3-1. It was an incredibly deserved playoffs finals win for Team Liquid, coming in from the lower bracket, destroying C9, destroying FlyQuest, and all of this started from what was also a very competitive 3-2 against FlyQuest that they did end up losing in the first round. But we saw TL be able to hang with the best in that 5-game series, albeit they came up short, but they absolutely ran it back here in the lower bracket. Jan did have some nice moments. CoreJJ had some good engages, impacting Umpty as well. I think Umpty had a pentakill, I forget which series it was, but he did have a pentakill in this playoffs on the Jax. But the main storyline to me, and the LCS agreed with me because they gave him the finals MVP, was APA. Yapped in America. Yappa. He absolutely was an animal in playoffs, and I don't know where it came from, because this is a guy who, along with Jan, we've criticized them heavily, not being the biggest names, having way too many inconsistencies, getting caught out a lot. That's been the thing holding Team Liquid back, is these guys not quite being in the right spots at the right time, or they look for something that doesn't work out, and then they look kind of silly. APA was just a complete beast, whether it was on the Ziggs, on the Aurelion Sol, which just absolutely crushes like everyone on, I guess, in the LCS at least, the Taliyah. It's that everything this guy played, like it almost always was just like a positive, just like, wow, like I can't believe APA is actually doing this good finally. And when you look at Team Liquid as a whole, watching them kind of become this team that has been very proactive, and we've talked about it before in the previous podcast about like the combined kills per minute and just seeing them play a much more aggressive game. This originally started as that TLCK experiment where it's just like, okay, we're bringing in all the Korean players, we're going to speak Korean. Even the gameplay was just like, you know, pretty slow and like trying to be methodical, but it wasn't working out for them. And this shift that they've had into this style, while still being able to incorporate some good scaling picks and champions, like they'll play the Smolder, they'll play the Aurelion, so those aren't necessarily like, you know, like early game like super aggressive champions, but they're proactive. The Aurelion Sol especially really enables APA to get around the map, and just seeing that dragon fly around in the early game, it might not be super impressive still, but once you get into that mid game with the stacks and the ultimate actually becomes like really impactful, and it has the knockup and it spreads throughout the entirety of the map dealing that damage, and then watching him fly with like a Rylai's Crystal Scepter on him finally, so he's slowing everyone around him too with the dragon's breath, he's just able to have so much impact across those fights. But it starts off still from having this weird thing where they're still able to manage that proactivity in the early game and that scaling on those carries, especially with APA, I think so. It's been very impressive to see them kind of evolve, and I'm really looking forward to watching them play at MSI internationally, because I really don't know what to expect. Like, this is a team that really came out of nowhere, got hot at the right moment here in playoffs, and that's always kind of a nerve-wracking thing to see going into an international event, a team that generally speaking people have been low on going into the season, but they get hot at the right time. Are they actually really going to be able to keep this up and keep the performances trending going to international events? But at least for the LCS, This is the best team. They took Fly to 5, close series. Now they get the revenge on them 3-1 in the finals. And then again, especially APA, I think, has definitely looked like the most transformed player on that team. So huge, huge congratulations to them. A lot of improvement has been done, and it's just been really exciting to watch them play and develop and get to this point. As for FlyQuest, obviously, you could say that they ended up kind of choking in the end, a team that was expected to be top two, losing to Team Liquid here in the end. But it was a great season for them still overall. A lot of their players have looked really good, inspired. You're still feeling very comfortable about as your jungler. Definitely could have been in MVP conversations for the LCS. I believe that ended up going to Quid, who also very much deserved it, not to snub him out. Bwipo definitely had some more rough moments in the playoffs than in the regular season, but still a good kind of reintroduction for him into the LCS stage again. Good to see him back playing. Overall, he's still up there. He's still a solid player, but just wasn't his time to shine in the finals, unfortunately, and in some of these playoff games. Jensen, though, was kind of weird. He played a lot of Annie, which I don't quite see where that came from out of nowhere. There wasn't a lot of Annie really being picked at all, and then all of a sudden she's getting picked, and Jensen's like playing her like almost every single game in the series, it felt like. So he was decent on it, but just not enough was able to go right for FlyQuest as a whole for it to be super relevant. So there's a lot of stuff I could talk about for FlyQuest too, but in the interest of time and the interest of letting you get to talk about it as well, one final congratulations to Team Liquid. Still a great season for FlyQuest. They're going to be representing NA at MSI along with Team Liquid, so I'm still looking forward to seeing them play internationally. And I think that in a kind of a weird way, again, just based off of like confidence around the general confidence around the teams, I might be looking more so at FlyQuest to perform internationally than Team Liquid. Maybe that's crazy to say at this point because of how convincing that series was, but I'm still going to be backing FlyQuest, I feel like, more than Team Liquid to make noise at international.
I'm going to start off by once again bringing the narrative back where the EU curse that I was worried about, unfortunately for FlyQuest, came true today. They obviously won the upper bracket very convincingly, 3-0, and then just a week later came in and got absolutely dominated. And TL for sure earned it because while you can point out that Fly underperformed across the board, I think that is true, TL just played crazy, crazy well across the board. Even that one game that Fly took really was just not all that convincing. TL looked competitive there too. So more than anything, I think that I owe Jan an apology. I called for him in the preseason preview to be removed. I thought that he had enough time to show what he can do, and we saw that there is. But he has finally rewarded TL's commitment to him by ramping up crazy, crazy hard. And in my mind, solidifying himself as probably the best AD carry in the LCS, at least right at this moment. And then just in the broader sense, TL in a single split, you know, we saw them start off as one of, if not the slowest teams in the entire world, to evolve into these early game beasts that are just finding leads, closing them fast, just all around playing very good League of Legends. Core we have in the bot lane back on form. Impact is still Impact. You get exactly what you would expect out of him. And then Umpty, like you mentioned, Steve, just went crazy. He got himself a Jax Penta kill, which I don't know if that was the first ever Jax Penta or the first ever Jungle Penta, but something to that effect, I think I remember hearing. And then, yes, we may call APA a sophomore, but he's technically, if you think about it, in his very first full split of the LCS. He stayed even with Faker. We talked about that in his debut international game at Worlds. And now he just continues to be an impressive player. He's outgrown that ASOL Ziggs 2-trick label people gave him. He's shown good stuff on other champs. And then, of course, on those two, he continues to play very well. So just all around, huge round of applause from me. I think that both of these teams have been showing very good moments across the split. TL, of course, towards the latter half have ramped up. Fly kind of fell off a little bit, but they've looked really good too. So, you know, now we've got a month gap or so but up until the start of MSI. Who knows what might happen, but I think that NA's two representatives here have had very, very good showings between the both of them and actually look like they have the potential to do at least some damage. Whether that's against the Eastern teams, who knows? That might just be my usual cope as a Western fan, but I think at least in the rivalry between them and EU, I'm a little bit nervous about these two teams, if I'm being honest with you. So very, very good stuff. Round of applause again to TL for winning it all. I don't think anybody saw that coming. I certainly didn't. Fourth in the power rankings, now came first. So good stuff. Very happy to see that.
Caps is going to be pissing his pants that he has to go against APA. Unless they ban the Aurelion Sulks. I do generally think that that is still like his best pick. He obviously has shown, you know, better play overall. But that's the one thing, like if you have to ban like one champion as a target ban, I'd even let the Ziggs through. Gotta ban the ASOL though. It's even not for APA. Just in general, I've seen some ASOL games going around. That champion, at least in the West, it seems like he just runs rampant. Like he's able to scale up pretty freely, and just the amount of impact that he has with the mobility, the huge range on the ult when it finally gets up into that mid late game part of the game, it's just a monster kind of champion. So I would definitely, at the very least, ban the Aesol against APA. But other than that, it has been huge improvements from everyone on Team Liquid, as we've discussed. Would you say that you're still, I know I kind of mentioned it, would you say that you're still looking for Team Liquid maybe a bit more favorable? Because I think they have to go through the play-in still. So that is like kind of like the interesting dynamic. I'm pretty sure there's a play-in. And it's not like both of these teams are slotted in right away. So are you looking at FlyQuest more so, you think, to be able to be the better performing team going into MSI? Or would you put it on Team Liquid based off of this?
So just to be clear, because FlyQuest lost the finals, they're actually going to go in as the second seed. They're going to be the ones playing play-ins. So
okay.
Yeah, so TL is going to be first. They're slotted directly into the main stage. And then it's going to be FlyQuest that has to make that run through the play-ins to earn themselves a spot on the main stage. So
I guess that makes sense, yeah. I just assumed that was going to be FlyQuest since they qualified first. But yeah, that makes a lot more sense, that since TL won. I was thinking about it like EU, because G2 already had their slot lined up since they won in Winter Split. So I was thinking that maybe they just had the automatic spot too. But yeah, obviously G2 still has to go through their own battle as well. They need to win Spring.
Yeah, even on that side, if G2 just kind of falls out at some point here, then they're going to be the second seed. And then it's just whoever wins Spring is going to be first. And then the second seed is decided based on either championship points, or it'll just be G2 again. So
yeah, so my bad on that one. I definitely think that FlyQuest should be able to make it out of the play-in. And then yeah, it'll be fun to see both of those teams to do their thing against presumably, again, we'll say presumably G2 going into the main stage, but there could be some surprises in EU. We'll just have to wait and see.
But yeah, to kind of loop back and answer your question, because I didn't actually do that yet, is I do think that Fly is probably going to be a favorite, at least, to make it through play-ins. Usually the competition there isn't all that fierce, because of course you have plenty of minor region teams, and generally speaking, NA should be better. Who knows, of course, on the day, but I would say that they're favorites. And then in a lot of cases, I think that just because you at that point have been on the stage and kind of work through those initial nerves, you do get sort of a little bit of a buff there when you, if they make it to main stage, then they kind of have a little bit of comfort there and might look good. So I do think that generally speaking, like, forget what we've seen just now, I probably would bank on FlyQuest more so, just because I think that they have a little bit more of that pedigree, and then, you know, the Inspired and Bwipo kind of mind games and sort of freak factor, if you will, is a big asset to them. Meanwhile, TL, your solo laners, or sorry, your carries between APA and Yon are still your newer players, so I think that they are a little bit more at risk of being exposed against, obviously, those Eastern teams. So to put a long story short, I think that Fly, I think, will probably have the better performance internationally, but anything can happen. If TL can continue this form, they do look like the better team. So with all that being said, we've had plenty to talk about, like always. The LCS is unfortunately done, so we're not going to have any more of that in terms of actual games to discuss for the next month or so. But the LEC is still in its final stages of Spring. We got 2 more weeks to look forward to, and we'll be bringing you back coverage of that. So be sure to drop us a follow here on Spotify. Stay tuned for those episodes. We're going to have a little bit more stuff planned out for the LCS, kind of talk about things like All Pro and give something for you to look forward to. But then also be sure to catch our discussion leading into MSI, because that, as always, the internationals are going to be very exciting. We're going to have a look at the Eastern regions a little bit, and then, of course, focus more on the Western side. But as always, a big thanks goes out to all of you for sticking around to the very end here, continuing to support us here at the Western Focus Podcast. If you enjoyed, drop us a 5-star rating. That'd go a long way in supporting us. And then also drop us a follow on Twitter. That's @NoRival_esports for all our other content. And you can also interact with us there. Give us your hot takes. Tell us what you think about these two teams representing NA, as well as what's been going on in the LEC. So we'll see you next week. Stay tuned. Be there, be square.